This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
Ondami's win is the warning sign. Those are the headlines of the Jerusalem Post. The warning sign, the drama that unfolded in New York's mayoral race, should concern us all because what is at stake is much bigger and more troubling than a single election. The ugly truth is that anti-Semitism is no longer a fringe issue in America. It's moved into the mainstream. And nowhere is this shift more glaring than in liberal New York City. It's tempting to pin the blame on one candidate, says the article. But political candidates are, in the end, mirrors of people who rally behind them. In other words, they reflect the people. What should trouble us most is how many are willing to back someone who openly mocks Jewish holidays, cheers for the Intifada, and tacitly supports anti-Semitic protests on university campuses. The vast numbers of Jewish New Yorkers are at worst supportive of views hostile to Jews. That's exactly the conclusion that has to be drawn because of the clarity of Madama's hatred toward the Jewish people as a strong Muslim connected with socialistic communism. So today on Viewpoint, we take a deeper look. Some would call it a deeper dive. A deeper look at this matter, and I'm glad that you joined us. Our focus is not primarily on Mamdani, even though it's called a deliberate design behind his meteoric rise. We'll look at that as well. But also, what does this reveal concerning a broader perspective on anti-Semitism, not only in America, not only in New York, but all over the world? And what does it imply, then, for you and for me as professing Christians? Let me share with you, as we launch into our program here today on Viewpoint, words from the mayor of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. The mayor of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Coeur d'Alene has to do with the heart. Coeur d'Alene. Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, the heart. So what is the heart? Well, the mayor's words reflect the heart of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Listen. He was caught in a self-promoting video, unleashing, perhaps spewing is a better word, a vile and uncontrolled rant condemning Christians. Not condemning Jews, but condemning Christians. Mayor Don Gookin of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, called Christians mindless cult member morons, accused them of white nationalism, and said they can't, well, they can, well, he used a very common expletive here that I cannot repeat. They can go to hell. They can do something to themselves and go to hell. Watch, according to one commentator, or which, according to one commentator, simply prove the accuracy of the Bible, which in the New Testament explains what Christ said. If the world hates you, keep in mind that it hated me first. If you belong to the world, it would love you as his own. But I've chosen you out of the world, and that's why the world hates you. Well, it appears Gookin has unleashed earlier anti-Christian diatribes, and I listened to him in his own words, in his own tone, with his own facial expressions, and indeed, they were every bit as much vile as what I just read and more so. But I couldn't bear to air them here on the program today because it would be, well, it would, the words, the expressions would not be received and should not be expressed on this program. No, we're looking for truth and we're looking for righteousness. We're looking for purity of mind and heart and expression. And today, that's what we're doing. But the reason I brought that to your attention is because this matter of anti-Semitism is the threshold to exploding Christian persecution. Today, our particular focus is regarding the matter of the election of Mamdani and what it really means, not only for New Yorkers, but for the Jewish people all over the world, and what it also means for all of us as professing Christians, because the Jewish people come first with the anti-Semitism, and after that come the Christians who came from the Jewish people. And isn't it interesting that in New York, Mamdani received 90% of the Muslim vote. 97%. The Muslim lobby in the United States publishes official figures on the voting patterns of Muslim citizens in the United States in recent municipal and gubernatorial elections. And here are the facts. 92% of Muslim voters supported the California constitutional amendment allowing changes to district boundaries. The Republicans claimed was completely and constitutionally unfair. In other key races, 84% of Muslim voters supported Congresswoman Mikey Sherrill there in New Jersey, while 97% voted for Zohran Mamdani, who was elected mayor of New York City. In Virginia, 86% of Muslim voters supported Abigail Spanberger for governor. 95% voted for Ghazala Hashmi for lieutenant governor of Virginia, a Muslim. The U.S. Muslim lobby stated American Muslims are present, making their voices heard, and shaping the future of our nation. I want you to consider that, shaping the future of our nation. In what direction? Well, the supporters of Mr. Mamdani have called for Sharia law to be brought about and enforced in New York, just as it is in some areas of London now, because they elected a Muslim mayor. So the two greatest financial centers in the world now have elected Muslim mayors. What does that tell you? Does it tell you anything? It should. For one thing, these folk are not in favor of capitalism. In fact, they're very antagonistic to capitalism. And yet they use capitalism as a means to gain dominion over the minds and hearts. They also use so-called democracy to gain dominion over the minds and hearts of people over which they seek to strip democracy from in order to import Sharia law that is not democratic at all. So you can see the trajectory of what is happening. The Jerusalem Post contained a special article from Michael Oren, who joined us years ago on this program. He had written a very great book, and so we interviewed him here on this program. But he is a former ambassador from Israel to the United States, and we want to hear what he has to say concerning this matter. So hang in there, my friends. Viewpoint determines destiny, and our viewpoint on these issues is determining destiny. America's viewpoint concerning these issues is determining destiny and the future not only of America, but the world.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Chrismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Welcome back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Chrismeyer. When my book, When Persecution Comes, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times, came out almost exactly 1 year ago this time, people, I'm sure, thought, well, you know, I think there's significance there, but I'm not sure just quite how significant that is, and I'm not really interested in talking about persecution and so on. Well, in the year that has followed, the reason for God inspiring me to write that book has been made very plain. across our world. It's like screaming at us. And yet people still don't get it. They want to pretend that it's not happening. They want to pretend that these things are just relatively irrelevant to them. And, okay, well, that's the Jewish people, and that's this, and that's the... No, it's... You heard from the mayor of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. I read that. Saying the same thing about Christians. Vile things about Christians. And there is a city that is deemed one of the go-to cities in America. Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. How did they possibly elect a mayor that had that viewpoint? Such an anti-Christian, vile anti-Christian outlook. Because the people in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, obviously were like him. They had the same kinds of thoughts behind the scenes. Maybe they weren't spoken except in the election. But they knew what the kind of man this was, because this wasn't the first comment that he had made about that. So what we're finding is, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth is speaking. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth is speaking with regard to anti-Semitism against Jews. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth is speaking against Christians. Growing. And it's not just in Nigeria where they're butchering Christians hand over fist, so to speak. No, it's in America, the land of the free, that's increasingly becoming only the home of the brave. It's lurking behind doors. It's in dark corners. It comes out in unsuspecting times and moments, but it's there. And it's coming out more and more. Just as anti-Semitism was known before Mondami was elected, but now it comes out and screams at us, telling us how far this has gone and is going, and that this is a catapulting incident that is going to ravage the entire world, and Muslims across the world are cheering, cheering, cheering. We won. We're winning New York. What is it, 15% of those who voted for Mamdani were Muslims, and there 97% of Muslims voted for Mamdani? The idea, as expressed by Muslims, if we can gain 6% of a population, we can take over. 6%. Now, again, when I talk about Muslims here, I'm not talking about just people who were cultural Muslims. I'm not talking about people who were born in a country that was traditionally Muslim. I'm talking about people, that's their belief system. The Sharia law is how they live. Because there are many people, like within the so-called Christian community, if you can call it that, where they are cultural Christians. In other words, they would say, well, I'm not Muslim, I'm not Hindu, I'm not this and that, I'm Christian, therefore. Well, that doesn't make them a Christian, but they're generally oriented that way, and so they would call themselves Christians. That's not the way in which we're using the term here on this program. We're using the term as real followers of Jesus Christ. A Muslim, then, that we're talking about is one who is a real and dedicated follower of Muhammad and the Islamic faith, that believes that that is the one true faith, and they live according to it as best they can. It's taking over America. And it's a driving force in anti-Semitism. Barack Obama was one of the leading forces to bring this about in our country, purposely. Remember, the very first thing he did when he was elected president was to go into Islamic nations and apologize for America. He went to Egypt to the number one Islamic seminary there, university in Cairo, He didn't go to Christian people. He didn't go to Israel. He didn't go to any. He went to Muslims. That's all he did. And then he brought Muslims into his administration, including his right-hand gal, who was a Persian Muslim, dedicated. Barack Obama was a Muslim. You can argue it however you want, but that's where he showed favor. He showed no favor to Christians. He showed no favor to Jews. He showed favor only to Muslims. And he set the tone for the rise of Islam in America. Now we see what has happened in New York. And Barack Obama is congratulating Mamdani for his election as a Muslim in New York. Michael Oren stated in an article in the Jerusalem Post today that the rise of New York's new socialist or communistic mayor marks an inflection point as Israeli officials and Jewish leaders brace for its wider implications. Now, he's the former ambassador to the United States, Michael Oren, O-R-E-N. He said the morning that the Jewish community leaders awoke with a sense of disbelief after that election, the man who once accused the Israeli army of lacing the boots of the New York Police Department would now govern a metropolis that hosts the world's largest Jewish population outside Israel. Oren described the outcome as a dark day. To him, the election was not a local curiosity, but a watershed moment for our relationship with the Democrat Party, which from Israel's perspective can now seem irredeemable. Michael Oren saying the Democrat Party, from the Jewish perspective, is now irredeemable. There's no going back. The Democrat Party is no longer a place of welcome for the Jewish people. Yet 70% of them constantly vote for Democrats. Will that continue to be the case? Michael Oren says no. The Democrat Party is fundamentally against you. You cannot justify voting there. Oren warned that anti-Semitism is not only being normalized, it's being popularized, arguing that Mamdani's victory came not despite or in spite of his anti-Israel views, but because of them. In other words, the fact that he was anti-Israel is actually what largely drove his election. Now, that's interesting. In New York, leading Jewish organizations framed the event a grim milestone. They warned that anti-Semitism remains a clear and present danger, even in the places where American Jews have long felt most secure. So Oren dismisses the distinction often drawn by progressives between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism. He asks the question, does Israel have a right to exist? Does Israel have a right to defend itself? He says Mamdani's worldview and the enthusiasm it inspired among younger Democrats as part of a growing movement that answers both questions in the negative. In other words, Israel doesn't have a right to exist and doesn't have a right to defend itself. A lawmaker, Mayor Cohen, there in Israel, told the Knesset that this morning in New York is a black morning. He called for a permanent, he was talking about Mamdani. He said, Mamdani called for a permanent intifada against the state of Israel, permanent war. The former education minister added that Mamdani's opposition to Israel was the basis of his entire campaign. And in many respects, he's right. So he merged it with socialism and communism and together took the hearts of young Americans who elected him. So was the article in the Jerusalem Post that Mamdani's win is a warning sign? I think so. It's like a sign of the times, that the ugly truth that anti-Semitism is no longer a fringe issue in America, it's moved into the mainstream, and nowhere is this shift more glaring than in the liberal New York City and on its back will come Christian persecution. So, I would urge you to get a copy of my book, When Persecution Comes, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times. Friends, this is not a side issue. You can think that the failure to open up the government is the big issue of everything. It's not. I'm not diminishing it, but it's not the biggest issue. I tell you that this issue of anti-Semitism, that it will be the driving force to usher in Christian persecution, is the biggest issue. It will have not just international effect, but national effect. It already is. But because you haven't been touched by it yet, you're not really moved by it. But one of the reasons why we're bringing this to your attention is to help us all understand, before it becomes completely out of hand and commands our focus in this country, that we do what we can to prepare our minds and our hearts, which we can do. That's why I wrote the book, When Persecution Comes, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times. It's a book for you. You can take this book, dads, you can take this book and sit down with your family. Every chapter has questions that follow that help to provoke conversation. Like, how can a professing Christian's attitude actually foster, facilitate, or even foment persecution? Or you, here's another one. From your perspective, what clothes does persecution or the persecutor wear that would enable you to discern persecution? And those are just threshold questions. Why or in what ways might our viewpoint regarding persecution actually define the course of our destiny? In what way or ways does our perception of persecution reflect our understanding of what it means to be a disciple of our Lord? These are the kinds of questions, friends, that should provoke our thinking, that would help us to be able to respond in the evil day, and having done all to stand, to still stand when the raging of persecution comes. And it's coming. The Jewish people in New York never believed that such a thing could happen as it did last week. Never believed that. Are still having a hard time believing it. The whole world is shaken by that. And yet, somehow, American Christians don't quite get it. It's not just about the Jews. It's about Christians as well. So, I urge you to get a copy of the book. It's one of the most loving things that you could do for your family. Read the book and then sit down with them and use it. I mean, you could use this book for an entire year, once a week with your family. Have great conversations. Build deeper trust in the Lord, because that's what it's all about. Preparing hearts for perilous times is not amassing some sort of food or food bank or something like this. No, it's not about that. The heart is the issue. It's a $25 book. Here's for $22 on our website, saveus.org. Saveus.org. Call us at 1-800-SAVE-USA. 1-800-SAVE-USA. Or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70870, Pittsburgh, Virginia, 23255, at $6. And we'll be back.
There is so much more about Chuck Chrismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, SaveUS.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at SaveUS.org.
Today we look at a further fallout and the echoing consequences of the election of Zohar Mamdani there in New York, and the spirit of that election that actually caused Muslims to vote, turning the tide in New Jersey, turning the tide in Virginia, and in California in those elections. So, a member of the Knesset, Ohad Tal, expressed sharp criticism following the election of Zohar Mamdani as the mayor of New York City. But what was interesting is he said, you know, maybe his victory is a good thing. So how could he say that? Well, because he thought, well, maybe this could spark a patriotic awakening to reclaim national values and direction in New York, or in America. He said, I think the joke is that Mamdani was elected with the votes of so many Jews who supported him. Yes, but what does that tell you about the nature and heart of the Jews that supported him? It reveals that the younger generation in America lost the ability to differentiate between good and evil, said the member of the Knesset. Yes, okay. And if New York, which is a symbol in America, will fall to the hands of this crazy wokeism and progressivism, they'll lose New York. So, he says, maybe this could be a positive thing, that through this craziness, people will wake up to fight back for the land. They'll realize what happens to them. Their future can be just like New York, like London, like Paris, and they'll fight back for the soul of their country. I hope they will succeed. They won't. Friends, this is far too far gone. Do I believe that God can change things? Yes. I do believe that the Holy Spirit can move upon people. Yes. But the Bible does not tell us that everything is going to be better and better, that everything in every way is going to get better and better. It tells us it's going to get worse and worse. And it's not because I'm not an optimist. It's because I'm a realist and believe the Bible. I'm optimistic that if we will, after 30 years of coming before God's people day after day after day after day, confronting the deepest issues of America's heart and home, that there will be a few who will get the message, and their hearts will change, and they will begin to become, to act like the remnant of God's people and prepare the way of the Lord for the Lord's second coming. That's what I believe. That's hope. But I do not believe, and I think those who are trying to sell you a bill of goods, that there's going to be this massive awakening so on across the world, that the majority of people are going to come to Christ. It just ain't true. It's contrary to what Jesus himself said. He said, straight is the gate, narrow is the way, and precious few there be that find it. But broad is the way that leads to destruction, many there will be that go in thereat. He also said in the same passage in Matthew chapter 7 that not everyone who even claims to be his follower, a Christian, is going to inherit the kingdom. Only those who do the will of my Father, he said. Just like I did the will of my Father, he said, now you do the will of my Father. He said, as the Father sent me, even so I send you. To do what? To do the will of the Father. And that's not just evangelism. The will of the Father is to live like a disciple, to live righteously and holy in this wicked and perverse generation. So, it is not going to stir the minds and hearts of Jewish young people. It's not going to stir, these things have not stirred the minds and hearts of Christian, supposed non-Jewish young people in our country. You might say, well, didn't Charlie Kirk and all his efforts have a stirring effect? Yes. Did it bring people to Christ? Not many. He got them to think about things. He got them to think about conservatism. But precious few came to Christ. And that's not to put him down. What he did was a wonderful thing. A great leader for such a time as this. But they killed him. Who killed him? Anti-Christian people killed him. That's called persecution, friends. Lest you forget the word. If they persecuted me, Jesus said, they will persecute you. Why do you think you should be different than your Lord? Now, you got people out there that are telling you in the name of the Lord for the pulpits of America that you don't have to be concerned about any of this because you're out of here. Well, that makes Jesus a heretic. That makes Jesus a liar, a prevaricator, a deceiver. Because what he said wasn't true. Look, people want to believe what they want to believe, and they will believe what they want to believe. That's what deception is all about. And people come with blithe tongues, selling theological ideas that make people feel good, that salve their itching ears, that raise money, that sell more books. That's how it works. That's the evangelical economy. To a certain extent, tell the people what they want to hear. Have it your way. The Burger King idea. So, one of the problems that we're facing here in coming to grips with what is happening is that we just aren't willing in America to believe that what's happening in Nigeria, what's happening in Iran, what's happening in Syria, what's happening in Egypt, what's happening in Sudan, what's happening even in the UK is not going to happen here. But it is. It's already happening. World Tribune says that there was a deliberate design behind Mamdani's meteoric rise. A sophisticated collaboration between socialist activism and Islamic organization, lubricated by millions in foundation grants and political donations, and normalized through a revolving door of political operatives and nonprofits who embrace Islamists, the destruction of the State of Israel, and hostilities to the police, the U.S., and the West. That's the same spirit that Ilhan Omar in Minnesota carries on as a Democrat. This article goes on to tell us just how the various organizations, Islamic organizations, like the Council on American Islamic Relations, a so-called nonprofit, have gathered together all of these groups and pumped vast sums of money into Mamdani's campaign. It was a campaign funded by Muslims and communistic socialists. Let's be honest. The jihadist influencers are on fire across the world. They call it the Mamdani migration. They say, we're done hiding. We're done. This is the correct religion. This is the religion that all humanity needs to be part of, Islam, and we will not stop until it enters every home, every district. It should tremble. Brooklyn should hear it. The Bronx should hear it. Queens should hear it. There is no God worthy of worship except Allah and Muhammad, his prophet. This is the spirit of it, my friends. This is not just any old election. This is, as Michael Oren said, an inflection point for America and for Jews in America and all over the world. And by implications then, for Christians in America and throughout the Western world. Hate to put it so bluntly, why is it that the Vatican now is probing a Swiss guard, one of the Swiss guards there guarding the Vatican, who spit on a couple of Jewish women as they went by? It was an interfaith event, but the Swiss guard spit on them. They said, we looked on each other in complete shock. That happened right there at the Vatican. Now, I'm going to share with you information coming from the UK that some have mistranslated. Someone called me this morning concerning this, said, is this true? Well, the way they framed it was not true, but what I'm going to share with you is true. So, it has to do with pregnant women in the UK. Before we get to that, I want again to urge you, if you do not have the book, When Persecution Comes, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times, to get it immediately. Begin to read it slowly. Go to the questions at the end of each chapter. They're not just mundane questions. They're serious questions, thought-provoking questions. A $25 book, yours for $22 on the website, saveus.org. Get it today. We'll be back.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click sell church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Again, I welcome you to Viewpoint. Viewpoint does determine destiny. Our viewpoint concerning the matter of anti-Semitism, attitudes toward the Jewish people. No, Jewish people are not perfect by any means. No way. And yes, indeed, it was the Jewish people that did facilitate the crucifixion of Christ. No question about it. You must admit the truth. It is true. It was the high priests and the rabbis, the Sanhedrin, that voted essentially to have Jesus crucified. They despised him. They feared him. They were afraid that Jesus would take away their power, perks, and position with the Romans and with the Jewish people, and therefore they suborned perjury. They got other people to come in and dragged Jesus to Pontius Pilate, the Roman governor, who had only he had the authority to call for a death penalty, which he did at the urging of the Jewish leaders that cried out, "Crucify him, crucify him. His blood be upon us and our children." They did that. Yes, they did. But judgment against them is not ours to bring. We understand what they did. We don't agree with it. It was a blasphemous thing that they did, in the name of blasphemy, by the way. But they did it. Yes, it was Roman soldiers that actually put the nails in Jesus' feet and hands, but it was the Jewish leaders that brought him to be crucified and demanded the crucifixion before Pontius Pilate, who declared, "I find no fault in this man." So all he did was make a political decision to try to keep the peace with the Jews. That's what he did. So in effect, both Jew and Gentile crucified Jesus, in reality. Let's be honest about it. So, that having been said, we're not anti-Semitic because we admit that. That's what the Bible tells us. It's a history fact. That's not anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism is coming against Jewish people because they're Jews. The Jewish people today, they did not actually crucify Jesus. Even though they do not believe that he's the Son of God, they believe that that's blasphemy. So do the Muslims. God's business is to judge the people. We can discern, but we don't condemn. Our job is to treat the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as the chosen people by God, and then let God take care of the rest. We're supposed to treat them honestly, fairly, justly, just as Jesus would. But our job is not to malign. We do have the ability and right to be concerned about certain things that a Jewish leader or Israel itself might do. That's not anti-Semitism in and of itself. But anti-Zionism is. Because anti-Zionism basically is just another modern way of saying, we don't agree with the Jewish people, you don't have a right to the land, you don't have this, you don't have that. And so they use anti-Zionism as a means of expressing anti-Semitism. Verily so. Now, an issue came up in the UK. I received word of that this weekend, and it was expressed in this way. The Jewish women in the UK were needing guards to go with them to the hospital when they were going to give birth. So someone called me today, this morning, and said, "Is this true?" So I said, "Well, I can't verify that it's true or not true. I just heard that it was said." So I said, "While we're here, let me just do some research with you, and let's find out what the truth really is." Well, here it is. The answer is no. Jewish women in the UK are not required by law or religious mandate to have a guard go with them when they're ready to give birth, nor is there anything, any indication that they're bringing guards with them. That's not the right word. However, a report from November 2025, that's this month, in the Jewish publication in the UK, JC.com, is titled Pregnant Jewish Women Are Enlisting Doulas to Keep Them Safe When They Give Birth, with the National Health Association there in the UK. Mothers-to-be are employing the services of Jewish doulas for the birth of their babies to have someone on their side amid a wave of reports about anti-Semitic staff in the National Health Service in England. Now, what this is saying is that anti-Semitism is so great, so pervasive in the UK, that Jewish women increasingly do not feel safe in Jewish the National Health Service hospitals. So they're hiring women like someone that comes along to help a pregnant woman give birth. There's a term for that. It's not coming to my mind at the moment. You'll know what it is. And many women do that in their homes. They have someone, it's on the tip of my tongue, but it's not coming out. Those things happen to me occasionally. So it's a non-medical professional who supports women during childbirth, a doula. Almost every pregnant Jewish woman who had hired her since October 7th feared anti-Semitism among medics. At least 11 mothers-to-be had employed this particular woman, Shoshana Marr, a London-based doula, for the specific reason in the past 2 years, because they did not feel safe in the hospital because of the anti-Semitism of those in the National Health Service. So the woman says, there's no question that nearly every Jewish client since October 7th has had the same anxiety about anti-Semitism in hospitals. Are they going to be treated the same way as everyone else? Will they be treated badly? One British Jewish mother who recently gave birth and spoke on condition of anonymity said during her pregnancy in the weeks and months after October 7th, she felt extremely anxious and asked a Jewish doula to accompany her to the birth to help her feel safer. I was really nervous, she said. I didn't know who from the National Health Service would be delivering my baby, and I became increasingly preoccupied with who that might be. So I had a midwife. Ah, there's the term I was looking for. If I had a midwife, a doula who might have an opinion on this stuff, that might put my emotional safety at risk. I felt inherently unsafe and awareness of my vulnerability within that space. So, in any event, they're not asking for guards. They're asking for a Jewish doula or like a midwife to come alongside to be there, to encourage, to strengthen, and yes, with another person present there at the birth, to be able to confirm or deny what was being taking place at the hands of the National Health Service. Now, you can frame that however you want, but that's the reality. And apparently, for the past 2.5-3 years, it has become an increasing reality as anti-Semitism is growing dramatically. Now, think how that same thing might be if the thing moves from anti-Semitism to anti-Christian, which it's going to do. There are those who are virulently contrary to the Christian faith, like the mayor of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, that we introduced earlier in the program. It's going to happen. It is happening. People want to take the people's right to conduct a business in the name of the Lord. They want to take away a person's right to express things in school in the name of the Lord. And they might want to take away your right to have a baby in the name of the Lord as well. In other words, get rid of these Christians. We can't tolerate them. All right, the Jerusalem Post contains an interesting article as we wrap up here today. Zionism is racism. 50 years on, the United Nations lie that haunts Israel. And here's the issue of this. 50 years after the UN declared Zionism is a form of racism, its legacy still continues to fuel anti-Semitism and distort human rights discourse. So 50 years ago, Israel's then ambassador to the UN, Chaim Herzog, lambasted the assembly from the dais, telling those who were gathered, "It is indeed fitting that the United Nations, which began its life as an anti-Nazi alliance, should 30 years later find itself on its way to become the world center of anti-Semitism." Indeed, it is. 50 years ago, on November 10th, 1975, the United Nations General Assembly voted to adopt Resolution 3379, which determined that Zionism, quote, is a form of racism and racial discrimination, unquote. What is Zionism? It's the desire of the Jewish people to have and occupy their own homeland. Eretz Israel, the state of Israel. So, the United Nations, the majority in the United Nations, by far, are contrary to the Jewish people and to Israel. The majority, by far. So the United Nations is an anti-Semitic organization. It comes out in almost every way you can imagine. All of their criticisms are against, most of their criticisms are against Israel, a little place called Israel. They just can't seem to criticize other people, but they criticize Israel because they hate Israel. Why do they hate Israel? Well, you can theorize it, but let me just say this as we wrap up. If God chose Israel to be his chosen people, not because they were so great, not because they were so beautiful or so wonderful, but because he chose them. Does that not then reside in the rest of the world as bringing resentment to the max? How dare that God call them the chosen people? They're no better than we are. We'll take them down. We'll show. And that's exactly what Satan intends to do. That is what anti-Semitism is about. Satan's effort through the nations of the world and its peoples to take down and destroy that which God said was the apple of his eye. Now, by implication, you see, Christians are grafted in. They then also become the apple of his eye, because they are not all Israel that be Israel, but they are Israel which are circumcised in the heart, not just in the flesh. That's the spiritual outlook. Therefore, Satan's goal is not just to take out the Jewish people, but to take you out as a professing follower of Jesus Christ. Now do you understand why we need the book, When Persecution Comes, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times? $25 book yours for $22 on the website saveus.org. Call us 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA. Write to us at Save America Ministries at $6 for postage and mail. I do not believe you're going to be disappointed. Read it with your heart open. God bless. Be a blessing.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismier. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.